Hello, everyone. Welcome to Dev to Dev, the inaugural episode of Dev to Dev, the podcast about everyday video game developers and why they do what they do every day. I'm Alex Solman, getting the hang of this whole hosting thing for the first time. So forgive me if I'm a little bit bumbly and stumbly, we'll get there. But thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening. Thank you for taking the time. With me today is Anthony, who's very kindly offered to lend his time to this conversation. Anthony, tell us who you are and what you've been recently doing.
Yeah, my name is Anthony Avanzanabriganti. I'm a game audio engineer, game audio programmer, depending on what company you're looking at. Last few years, I've been working at ZeniMax Online on our unannounced MMORPG, doing all things audio. Before that, I went to DigiPen as a computer science grad where I studied game development.
Fantastic. Thank you. And thank you for taking the time. It's good to get into it. We were previously colleagues at ZOS. And we've worked a little bit together. We've hung out, a few events over and chatted over a few beers, but it's good to actually spend some time and, kind of get to know your journey and how you got where you got. So thank you. Okay. So I'd like to start this conversation going right back to your origins as a gamer. Tell me about your sort of first interaction with video games and that made you fall in love with them.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's two stages there for me. There's the part where I started playing games and the part where they really became like, where I'd say I definitely was a gamer. Like that was a title I put on myself. I started playing games when I was, who knows how old, like they've always been there in my mind. My parents say that I picked up the Game Boy Color for the first time when my sister was born and I was no longer the center of attention. So it was a way to keep me quiet. I remember playing Pokemon Gold was allegedly the first game I've ever played. But I think from there, I always played games, but it really kicked off in, I'd say somewhere around, middle schoolish, late middle schoolish, where school, bullies are bullies. And I needed an outlet to kind of enjoy myself in and make friends through. And games ended up being one. Picked up who knows what, played everything I could, and was definitely a very avid gamer from that point forward.
Interesting. So video games kind of almost became I don't want to use the word solace, but they kind of became a connection point for you to bond with other people.
So.
And right.
Yeah.
So they sort of became, I guess, a very intrinsic part of your relationship to other people almost. Yeah.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, for me, like, especially at that age, like games were how I socialized through and through. Like I grew up in the era where that was an actual like possibility, network games were the go-to, easy to hop into a game, play with people, meet people. And that was a big part of how I actually got my social experiences as a child. Whether that's through just talking to people about games games at school or, actually meeting up with them online. And it was one way or the other that really connected me to others.
Right. And so, yeah, both that virtual sort of playing online and the physical playing together, you kind of had the best of both almost by the sounds of it.
Mm-hmm. Very much so.
That's cool. And so take me on the journey from there. So you're sort of playing games to be social, you enjoy, games are, I guess, a very mm-hmm. important part of who you are as a person. How did you first believe that you could make games? When did that sort of idea pop into your head?
Yeah, I have this very distinct memory of at some point, I think I was in seventh grade social studies class, and I was like, I'm going to make games. I was sitting there not paying attention to class, undiagnosed with ADHD until college. So I was, who knows what was going on in that head, but had one of those thoughts where I was just like, I really like doing this thing and I don't care what's going on in front of me. Why don't I make games and actually try to build one of these things I like myself. I think I was fortunate enough where, well, the idea of going into games as a career wasn't something like often spoke to amongst children yet. It was more of a real idea than it probably was for your generation. And that kind of gave me the opportunity to I think I went home that day and I started looking at like colleges that did video game development. And wow. That's how I ended up stumbling across DigiPen. And from seventh grade, I knew that was my goal. That was the target. And that was where I was aiming for. And lo and behold, it's where I hit.
That's amazing. Right. So you were inspired kind of off your own back to sort of try and make mm-hmm. games yourself. Do you think something triggered that? Or, had you seen someone else do it or read something about it or heard something about it that sort of gave you the idea?
I do think there was the part where I really remember going from just the abstract idea of I want to make games to ending up in programming and all that stuff was like Minecraft mods. I don't think that was the inception for like setting the path of my road, you know, setting beyond the game development future, but it certainly was one where I actually went started to do the thing rather than just saying I was going to do the thing. But it really was, I think, a very intrinsic, like, you are what you consume in so many ways. And I was playing so many games that, like, it was not just how it was not just a solace or how I socialized, but it was also such a significant form of self-expression because of how much I consumed that content. That, like, of course, why wouldn't I make games? You know, like, that was such an obvious response to what do you want to do with your life? It's like, well, I like playing games. And therefore, the obvious answer is I should make games. Obviously, the differences between making games and playing games are huge, but at that time in my life, that was irrelevant and honestly still is. It's all about that passion.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love that idea of, you know, not only is it who you are, you know, in terms of friend groups but that idea of it being an expression, an extension of who you are as a person. I relate mm-hmm. to that a lot. I mean, when I was modding, not Minecraft, but Quake 2, right? You know, and, mm-hmm. and some of those games, it was very much that, how can I express what I am passionate about and excited about? And maybe I'm not seeing in the game that I'm playing, right? In Doom that I'm playing through my own expression. It sounds like, you know, I can imagine Minecraft, especially with its extensive modding, and was very similar, right? You were kind of, tell me about an example of that expression, right? Was it something you built or something you made that you were like, oh, that's me to a T, you know?
Yeah, I don't know if I don't know if I can say like that's me to a T as well as I like. It feels hard to identify it like that, where due to the fact that like the act of creating is so intrinsic, like regardless of the end product, it was I think even beyond games, I was always someone who was like, I would take apart a clock just to put it back together, kind of thing. That was always a part of where I was. So I think for me, what really made the jump between the two stages.
Uh-oh, you're back.
Okay.
Yes.
Cool. Yes.
That was a brief glitch. You're good.
Okay. Anyway, should I just pick up then?
Yeah, just pick cool. up. Yeah, the weather's crazy. It's all good. Yeah, just pick up where you were. All good.
Yeah. God, where was I? But yeah, I think for me, it was always the act of creation. It was something I was always involved in, making things, building things in a fairly... That activity was what I liked, you know. It was not necessarily about the end goal. It was just about the doing the thing. And I can recall, I think there's a YouTube video somewhere of me showing off my Minecraft mod that I made. And it was just like a new ore, you know. And I was playing Minecraft early days. So there was not a lot of the content that there is now, where it was much easier to go, I want this thing that's not there, therefore I should make it. Even if it was stupid. It was like, I want there to be a new ore, so I'll make it. There was no design thought to it. It was just, I want this thing, therefore I'll do it. And I remember sitting down programming and actually trying to like build this stuff from it would consume me. The idea of like, oh, I have this power. I have this creativity. I can sit down and make what I want rather than it being just like you're playing in someone else's space, but I can create a space for myself to play in or for others to play in. And that just opened up the door from there forward.
Interesting. So it sounds like you kind of like I think you said it, you sort of fell in love with the act of creation, right? The act of making a thing was the reason to do it rather than necessarily the thing you were making. Maybe the thing you were making was almost more of an excuse to go make something.
Yeah. Yes, very much so.
Interesting. Okay. And so that expression through that ability to do that through modding and stuff like that really drew you in. Is that what drew you? Because you went to DigiPen, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And is that sort of, and you said that was kind of, you sort of set your sights on DigiPen as a place to go. So was that creation sort of a means to get to DigiPen, or, you know, how did those two correlate between, you know, starting doing modding and then getting to DigiPen?
I mean, I think that was just like, it was the obvious answer, if that makes sense. Like, you know, everyone, you're going to college. What college are you going to do? From who knows how young you are. They shoot college down your throat from day zero. So the idea of what was the next step for me after high school was always something I was thinking about, even years before high school started. So once I realized that I wanted to make games, even before I wrote my first line of code, it's like, okay, well, what do I have to do that? How do you get a job in a thing? You go to college for it. Mm-hmm. That's what you're taught. That's what you said to do. So I go on the internet, look up the words video game college, enter. And it's either Full Sail or DigiPen is the top two that came up at the time. And DigiPen is what spoke to me. And from that point on, that was just a background like guarantee. Like, I was going to college for game development. took some convincing for my parents to ship me across the country to go to a school for video game development, especially one that was so specialized the way DigiPen is, rather than a generic, or not generic, but a regular institution with a game design major or game development major, but a real school built from the ground up for that purpose. Certainly took convincing, but the idea that I was going to college for game dev was never off the table.
Got it. Right. And where did you grow up? Sorry, where was sort of home?
Yeah, originally? Yeah. I guess the context on there, I grew up on Long Island, New York, so pretty boring suburb.
Right. And remind me, I forget where DigiPen is now relative to that.
Seattle, Washington. So other coast side of the country.
Mm-hmm. Right. And did you grow up with any siblings, anybody else that was kind of passionate about video games?
I mean, friends more than anything. I met my best friends through games. You know, like the one of my closest, someone I consider my brother today. I met through games, and that shared passion is what keeps us close today. Hmm. But in terms of my own immediate family, I was definitely the only the tech enthusiast or gamer among us. But I have an older brother and a younger sister, each with their own pretty unique interests compared to the other, which is nice to see.
Oh, interesting. Okay. But so you were kind of more the sort of gamer in the house, as it were.
The technical master and the gamer of the house, for sure.
Yeah, those two tend to go hand in hand, don't they? Okay, so you head over to DigiPen. You set your sights on it. You work through high school and get yourself over to DigiPen. And how did that shape you? How did that shape you as a gamer and as a creator?
Which part of that? The getting to DigiPen or the DigiPen?
Sorry, DigiPen itself. Yeah. How did that shape you?
I mean, I think that was one of the coolest experiences I could have had. Going from someone in, like, again, Long Island, New York, you know, there at that time especially, there was no game development. Like, the smallest, if any, game development scene existed, you know, like, it was still, even though, yes, game development was a more rising career choice, it was still definitely in the situation of, like, you tell a teacher you want to go to game dev and they don't know what you're talking about, kind of thing. So I went from an area that had no one else that was really trying to do this thing that I wanted to do besides the one friend I mentioned earlier, to suddenly going to a school where everyone in my freshman class was majoring in some sort of game development discipline. Everyone in the college was majoring in some sort of development discipline. And then on top of that, it's Seattle, which is like one of the bigger game development hubs in the US. So it was a huge shift in culture that really kind of shook things up for a bit and allowed me to really ground myself in that development, like, I don't want to say ecosystem is the wrong word, but environment, you know, really surround myself with peers that thought like I did or were interested in those kinds of things. And that was where you'd really take the hammer to the anvil. You know, like, I think prior to DigiPen, I was certainly like, I was the type of person who knew what I wanted to do, where I was able to define my path towards that direction. But like, college is where I actually went to work and refined the skills.
Right. And so being in that kind of environment surrounded by peers and, you know, folks who were also exploring their journey through creativity, did you immediately take to a particular part? I mean, obviously in the modding, form, you're kind of making a lot of everything, right? Building on tools that exist, but did you sort of immediately gravitate towards a particular, you know, angle of game dev, or were you fairly broad in your approach? How did that go?
I think going into DigiPen, I thought I was going to be a bit more of a technical designer than I ended up being, where I just felt like I knew I was a programmer first and foremost, for whatever reason. I'm not sure where that piece of my personality came up, but like, programming was always the ultimate career choice. I always looked at a Bachelor of Science in computer science kind of field. And that was always the direction, but I did think I was going to do a bit more of a design work, maybe again, technical design or what have you not. But through DigiPen's workload, that was a side thought that I had and not something that was able to really fruition. So I really dove deep into the technical spectrum of things and really developed those engineering skills.
Interesting.
During my, sorry. Yeah, go ahead.
No, sorry, go on.
I was going to say, yeah, during my second semester at DigiPen, they started up a digital audio degree, computer science and digital audio major, and it sounded cool. So that's where I jumped over ship and started poking around the audio domain, which is where I remain today.
Well, there's two fascinating aspects of that. So one, the engineering, because I'm always of the mind that engineering sometimes feels like the only obvious way to make video games, right? Outside of concept art or drawing pictures. Less so now because there's so many tools and, you know, so much more accessibility and approachability to democratization, I guess, of game development. Mm-hmm. But what was it about programming that sort of drew you in as you sort of said it was sort of always seemed like the thing you wanted to do? Like what drew you to programming?
I honestly don't know if I can give a good answer there, because like for me, it's one of those things where like it was what I just ended up. It was always what I ended up doing. Like it's kind of ironic because like I'm not a math guy, at least in terms of like you look at my pre-college career. I was C student in math. You know, I was never getting above that really. I think there was my freshman year of high school, they put me in like Algebra Plus, which was like the extended math class for people who just needed a little extra math help. Mm-hmm. Now I have a math minor. But like, I guess that was always the weird question that I still don't really have a great answer to. It wasn't like I was involved in technical side of things or the mathematical side of things, but I think it was the technical side of things that pulled me in. Like I liked solving problems. And the problems I like to solve tended to involve technology just for one reason or the other, whether it was looking up a new game console and hearing about its specs and its power, you know, and all that stuff. That kind of just technical focus pushed me towards the engineering side of things. And like, really, I would look at games from a like, oh, how do they implement this rather than what's the design here? That's just my natural question that comes up first. So I think it, for me, whatever it is, I think engineering is always just a fundamental aspect of my individual. Somewhere along the way, that was stamped on my psyche, whether it was conscious or unconscious, I can't tell you. But that's what really kind of put that title to my name.
Yeah, that's cool. It's almost like you said sort of the draw was the act of the creation, right? The act of kind mm-hmm. of assembling the thing and making it was kind of – and it sort of – I guess tracks in my mind that engineering would seem like the most powerful way to do that in many ways, almost like it gives you the most ability to construct whatever you want. And I guess it's maybe something like the Minecraft modding and kind of getting into some of that scripting and stuff like that kind of I always look at my own scripting skills. I always call myself like a Fisher Price coder, right? Like I can script, yeah. But it's mm-hmm. like primitive coding. I'm not smart enough to be an engineer. But mm-hmm. going the other way, right, if you started with scripting, maybe, you know, I'm not sure if you did, but maybe if you started with something like Minecraft scripting and then found your way into coding, maybe that would be an easy transition. I don't know if that's how it worked for you, but.
Yeah, I mean, I think for like Minecraft, it's Java programming. So yeah. It was just straight programming out the gate kind of thing.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah.
I think that there's a chance that in today's world, I might have been more of a designer. I think honestly, as well, there's some level of like with respect to the school, like with respect to DigiPen and the structure that I went into, at that time, there was not a good degree for a gameplay programmer field either. It was either like you're a designer who does some programming, you're a programmer, or you're this really like intense, like I will like break your back degree of, hey, just literally do both. since then they've tweaked things and there's now an actual degree that's a bit more of a proper gameplay programmer track. And I think there's a good chance that if I went to school today, that would be where I went and ended up doing that more like programming heavy technical design, gameplay programmer kind of thing than the stronger, more strictly technical audio engineering that I'm in today.
Yeah.
So I think there is a level there of like the environment that allowed me to learn how to do game dev, leaned me towards technical. But I do think that like you were saying, I think by reaching for Minecraft mods, you know, by at that time reaching for these things to make games, it was very much so a program and I took to it well. So it was, I fundamentally, I think easier for me than design is. So therefore when you like something that you're good at, it's easier to do more of that than the thing that you might kind of like, but aren't so great at out the gate.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. Yeah, and it's more tangible in many ways, right? If you're programming mm-hmm. and actually making something come to fruition as opposed to pontificating in a room on a piece of paper mm-hmm. about something that could be cool, which us designers do so much. So you went from DigiPen and you sort of moved into that engineering, that sort of the audio track. Like, talk to me about that. What drew you to that? Was that another expression of coding that you really put, you know, how did that connection happen?
Honestly, that was a bit of a Hail Mary of like, wow, that sounds cool. And then I did it like just course description, like, oh, like there was one class. I think it was like introduction to interactive sound synthesis. It's like learn how to synthesize rain sounds, wind sounds and whatever, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, those words are cool. And then I did it. I jumped ship. I was like the first person to switch to the new degree and kind of just ran with it. And along the way, like I'm not a musician. I don't come from a music background like at all. Like I there's this thing like the New York State, like, I forget what it stands for, like NISMA, this music program that New York State does. I did it and I was so bad. They were like, yeah, we're not going to actually grade you. We're going to move you down to the, like, you're just showing up tier. And like, sounds good to me. So music is outside of my wheelhouse altogether. But the under the scientific backing behind music, the scientific, the mathematical backing behind audio really caught for me. Like that kind of work, that kind of thinking, the logic, the math, even for someone who, like, again, I was an Algebra Plus, for some reason, the way like signal processing works, like it just makes sense to me. And I just find it fun.
That's amazing. So, okay, I'm kind of reeling in a positive way about that. So an audio engineer that's not a musician, right? Mm-hmm. Which I can relate to massively, right? Sometimes you work in a field that is not necessarily your forte, but the nuts and bolts of it, you know, mm-hmm. are super interesting and draw you in and you know, you feel like you could be very successful there. So that's super cool. And then, you know, kind of the fact that it sort of correlates so well with your, you know, sort of level of maths ability, which I'm sure is far mm-hmm. above my almost not remedial, but not great. But it sort of drives really well with, you know, you sort of immediately found that connection maybe of like, oh, this sort of suits my programming style really well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. Like it was really one of those things where like just a lot of it made sense to me in a way that other stuff didn't. I do think there also was an aspect to it where I think that like, I was like, not a lot of people are doing this. I want to be cool and special. Certainly made it more appealing than otherwise. I think like I was mentioning, I was the first person to switch over to this degree program. And I think like on average, they graduate like 4 or 5 people in that degree. Mm. It's super tiny, for better and for worse, but it was definitely a very close knit, like small experience of focused instruction, which was really cool in the end. But that kind of, I did like that idea being, you know, a unicorn or whatever, which was just a fun thing to have on my repertoire.
Yeah.
But I also think that like, as I worked in audio, as I was in that field and yeah, I like the math, I like the science of it, like the type of code you have to do for audio. I also found that I really, really like working with audio people.
Mm.
I think that's one of the things that like has kept me around in it for so long is that like, I love working with audio folks, musicians, composers, like sound designers, composers. They're just really fun people to work with and really creative individuals to like bounce ideas around in a way that I really resonates with me.
Oh, great. So it's not just the work, it's the people that it tends to attract too. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I think we'll probably loop back around as we get more into your sort of professional career, but on that idea. But so you're kind of on this sort of almost unicorn program where there's only a few of you kind of doing mm-hmm. it. You really take to it really well and you graduate DigiPen. But then you go into non-gaming sort of tech audio fields. Yeah. That's sort of your first professional career.
Kind of. Part of your career. So there were 2 internships I did while at DigiPen, just like summer internships. Mm. One of them was at my first one was at Sugi Studios, a game audio middleware company in Japan.
Okay.
So that was, albeit more, it was not on games, it was on game software.
Yeah.
You know, so targeting that field, still working in that space with those people, but definitely more of a R&D side of things, albeit with that game flair. Mm-hmm. And then from there, my last internship was at Qualcomm doing real, just straight audio tech R&D. Yeah. And that was an interesting kind of pivot in terms of the application that I was doing.
Right, right. And so, yeah, I guess that was a different kind of focus, not necessarily in a realm that, you know, you were as passionate about maybe versus mm-hmm. games, but the work itself was still, you know, it sounds like the work was what was really kind of drawing you.
Yeah.
The way you had to do that work was fascinating.
Yeah, I think for both of them, the work was, that's like, there's so many layers to it. Like what you're working on is so important, but also how, like the thing you're doing in terms of the actual day to day is equally as important. You know, like I think if you tell me build like an incredibly complex audio system for a Barbie game like that, sure, I might not like working on Barbie, but like that kind of problem solving of, yeah, how do I build and engineer an awesome music system for a composer for a Barbie game could be sick still. You know, that could be something very exciting and very engaging to work on, even if the theme of it is not necessarily in line with my tastes. Hmm. So I think that same kind of thought applied to more so Qualcomm than Sugi, because Sugi was so still kind of game centric that it felt like I was still in the games industry. Mm-hmm. Both Qualcomm, it definitely was like taking the skills that I've learned from game development, all the runtime requirements, all the high performance necessity that like game audio needs, and all the skill that I got there and bringing it to a more R&D space was a really interesting change of pace, and going like, all right, well, like, you can build audio for games, but you can also like innovate on audio technologies and actually push like, hey, what I was working in there was like a prototype for streaming tech about like, how can we improve the binauralized, like the spatial audio experience on low, like not lower end, but like lower end hardware for VR. So like really like the old Quest 1, how can we do some complex audio stuff on the Quest 1 in a way that's sustainable and actually works without incurring any of those latency costs? And that was a cool little practical experience of that like R&D space, but ultimately games will win me over.
Games are where your heart is, even if the work is engrossing. Okay. So those are your kind of internship roles. And then from there, you then get a job. Is it DPS Games you got a job at? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. From there, I started working at DPS. They're a pretty cool company that's a subsidiary of Wargaming based out in the UK. Mm-hmm. And I was there for 6 months before the logistics of that UK move didn't end up working out. So I wasn't able to stay with them for too long. But that was an awesome time to like go hands-on with Unreal, get my first real professional experience working on a game. And this is where some of that like love for working with sound designers really started to like come into play. Because at school, there was definitely opportunity for that cross collaboration, quite a fair bit of it, but it was not in a like day-to-day practical experience like it was at DPS.
Yeah, so that's an interesting one. So you go from, because a lot of the courses like DigiPen, they do a really good job of kind of simulating a game development experience, right? You're cross-collaborating, you're working combined on a project, you're sort of, you have a specialty and you're kind of working. So you kind of get that as opposed to just being on your own and building something yourself or studying on something else and then trying to, you get that idea of doing it. But to your point, it's not on an actual commercial thing. It's on something, useful. But so how was that transition? It sounds like did you go into it feeling like, hey, I kind of understand how this works. And then you were like, oh, wait, no, I don't. Or like, how was that transition from college?
Yeah, I give DigiPen in particular like a lot of props for how it sets up its curriculum. We build. I know some places wait till like your last year to do like a game development project or your last 2 years, whatever. At DigiPen, at least when I went, it was a game project every year from day one. First year was two projects in the year. Then from there on, it's a yearly project. So I had like an immense amount of experience working with people and making a game to the point where the industry, honestly, especially like I was doing small indie game development effectively in a simulated game industry environment while also having to take like 15 credits of other classes at the same time at a school that is known to be fairly rigorous for its instruction. Hmm. So that was a pressure cooker in a lot of ways. And not to get into the details there, for better or for worse, DigiPen can break some people and not others. But that like hard set, like, wow, I'm working 100 hours a week doing this because I have this indie game project I want to work on and all this schoolwork. Guess I'll do both. Mm-hmm. Having two full-time jobs, transitioning into a single full-time job was actually a lot easier. Mm-hmm. I think that the difference there was that like the thing that took time to get used to was realizing that I actually only had one thing to work on now. It was not like I'm making this game project and I have to go do my English homework, go do my CS homework, go do all this other homework stuff. It was, here's this one project. And now here's an actually sizable team, not just I think the largest team I worked on at DigiPen was like 10 people.
Right.
So it goes from like 10 people to like, yeah, now your audio team is 6 people. The studio is 100 people. And that I think was where some learning pain took place in terms of learning how to like interact and communicate on a scale that big, especially remotely, where I was their only employee in the US. So everyone was on UK time. Right. Whereas like I'd hop on, they'd be hopping off basically. Mm-hmm. And that was a struggle too. Mm-hmm. But in terms of the actual development experience, credit to where due, DigiPen really set me up for that. I find work to be, for the most part, a lot easier than school was.
Interesting. Yeah, that makes sense. Like you say, not anywhere near as much to juggle. And more to focus. Okay, so you go into an actual, you know, developer, and you said you kind of immediately connect with the people mm-hmm. in that. What was it about those folks that kind of, you know, felt like they were your people?
And I don't even, that's always a hard one to put into words to someone, because it's that immediate, like, you just immediately get each other, you know, in some ways. Like, everyone on that team that I worked with, especially in the audio team, I actually had a senior audio engineer above me and an audio programmer above me who was kind of like my mentor. And like that relationship, like, immediately was like a good friend, you know, just out the gate, someone I immediately connected with, just because we spoke the same language in terms of like the programming. We spoke the same language in terms of the audio. And like, there's just that special sauce that like audio people have in terms of like, not just what we talk about, but how we kind of perceive things. I'm not sure, it's a bit of a generalization, of course, you know, but like, there's just this slightly roguish attitude that I think audio people tend to take to the world that I really, a New Yorker, really like mess with. It's core to my soul, this slight kind of stick it to the man vibe that audio people carry really well. And that like culture is really fun for me to have those conversations and work with people in a way that feels way less formal than I think other areas of engineering or tech might.
Right. So you kind of get that. Is it that, I'm just guessing here, but mm-hmm. is it that sort of that creative soul meshing with that technical foundation, right? I feel like audio engineering is such an interesting, it's not something, you know, I've obviously interfaced with you and, you know, multiple other audio engineers in my career, but I'm not a sound guy, you know, I love mm-hmm. sound, but I'm not, you know, I don't understand it technically. So it feels like it's a really interesting fusion point of real creativity in terms of music and real technical foundation in terms of, you know, the way you're coding that audio engine and all, you know, all the many ways you make sound good, right? Which is not just mm-hmm. play sound at high fidelity and yay, right? There's a lot more to it. So it feels like that's maybe a really interesting, you know, junction point between creativity and engineering. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think that's like that junction point, I think, is what I really do love about games in general, but especially about audio, is that like there's something really powerful about like my role as an audio engineer is to let someone's creativity flow. Like my job is to unblock my audio team as well and as quickly and as effectively as I can. The faster they can create content, the faster they can express themselves, the better the game sounds, the better product we have, and like the awesomer things exist. Like building out tech, like these last 4 years, and seeing what like our audio team was able to do with it was awesome. Building, like putting together a tool and then having a sound designer go, this is one of the easiest ways I've been able to make content ever in my career, is one, a incredibly fulfilling experience, but also one that is so satisfying to know that someone's life was just made easier. Mm-hmm. And now there is, as a result of that, the ability for them to do what they want is higher.
Right. And if you correlate that back to what got you into the field in the first place, right, that ability to create something yourself, it's kind of interesting. It almost feels like that's transitioned into helping other people create stuff themselves. That's an interesting shift.
No, I definitely think that a lot of what I love about being an audio engineer is how much opportunity I have to empower others.
Mm, mm-hmm.
It's not like, and in some ways with like something like gameplay engineering, to some extent, there's this level of like, hey, here's this design, go implement it. Mm. And of course there's a back and forth there. There's a lot of creativity in that workflow, but it definitely, there's a level to it that is a bit more prescriptive. Whereas I think with audio engineering, I get to sit in this space that's almost a tools engineer, but also not always a tools engineer. So I can see problems in workflows and find solutions to them that are also gameplay features as well. Like I can go, oh, hey, we want to do this projectile thing. How can we build out the tech in a way that enables them to do a really cool whiz by sound effect that's creatively fulfilling beyond just the gameplay feature, but the tools and the workflows and how that integrates with WISE and the whole stream of that like audio pipeline there, I think really is interesting.
Right. So, wow. So it's the enabling part that really sounds like it really resonates to you, and especially given the people that you're enabling, right? You feel an affinity to the people, and then you feel, you know, an empowerment to enable them. How does that correlate to you as a person? Does that relate to your personality outside of work, or is that, you know, a unique thing to the way you work, or how does that relate to who you are as a person?
I feel like that's a question better asked for those that I work with than myself. I don't know. Probably in some way or the other. I think it's hard to say. I do think I enjoy making other people happy where I can, just whether that's work or interpersonal relationships. You know, I like to be, I am often finding myself being, helping other people wherever I can in their day-to-day lives with whatever I can. But I it's probably just some sort of intrinsic trait that blends itself into work and my daily life, if I had to guess.
Yeah, I think that's the I struggle with that too, right? So I think it sounds like we're very similar, that so much of what we do sort of defines who we are, right? I am a video game developer, but I'm also a person who is a video game developer, right? Those are intrinsically intertwined. And I think there are aspects of the way that I carry myself in my job that relate heavily to what I like to be, who I like to be as a person, but also what I like to do as a human. And it sounds like I often struggle to fully identify where those things are positive and negative, because I know some of my single-mindedness comes from my selfishness. I'm an only child. I'm prone to be a little bit selfish. And that is really enabling in my job, because I can be like super focused on something and like really like go and make something, like a little bit of that rebelliousness of like, I'm going to go make that and like show that it can be done, which sort of comes from that single-mindedness, but reflects sometimes badly in my personal life. So I'm always fascinated at that intersection between, because I think so many video game developers are defined by that, right? It's so much of a definition of who we are as people.
No, I completely agree. I think that honestly just extends to anyone making art in general. You know, not to dive into the philosophical conversation about like, what does it mean for art to be art? Are games art? Yes or no? You know, but like at its core, we're making entertainment. You know what I mean? And entertainment is art. And I think that the types of people that want to make entertainment are that is a category of individual. You know what I mean? Like my father is not the individual who wants to make entertainment. You know what I mean? That's just not in what his wheelhouse is, you know? Whereas if you're in games, you are that person that one way or the other, you know, somewhere along the line, your goal is to make something good for people to consume. Very rarely are people making games, never posting them anywhere and exclusively consuming them themselves. It's by definition, it is a collaborative experience. You make something and then you show it to the world. Like at its core, that is a requirement for games to exist publicly, is for you to share that with someone else.
Yeah, I agree that I think absolutely, to me, that is almost the core of what we're doing. I would challenge slightly that I think there are some people that do it just for the work and not for the product, right? They might do it for the art that they're making, or the character model that they're making, and actually the game that they're making is secondary, right? I think those people are rare. I think most people are more like, I think, me and you, where it's like, no, I know what I'm making. The end product is what matters. It doesn't really matter what I'm doing today unless it makes the end product better, or it makes us getting to the end product better. Because ultimately, like you say, we're trying to make something for people to enjoy and consume.
Yeah, no, I think that's totally fair. There's always going to be outliers to certain things, for sure. And I think even then, though, at the same time, it's the question of like, a lot of times those people end up going into general technology or general fields rather than sticking around in games, seem to have observed. So, of course, not a tried fast rule on either front. But I do think that generally speaking, like when, for better or for worse, not for better or for worse, for worse, when the games industry tends to not pay as well as either other industries do, people that are not in it for the games industry, for games, tend to find that they are happier elsewhere.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, so DPS Games, you were there for, I think, 6 months or so, you said?
Yeah, 6-7 months, something like that.
Okay, and then ZOS. You found yourself at ZOS. Was that a sort of like-for-like position? Was there any sort of shift in focus there, or did you just sort of pick up and carry on doing the same thing at a different place?
I think the main thing is that like it went from being a situation where I had a senior audio programmer who was in charge of me to being the only audio programmer on the team for a few months there before we had another one join up for a while. So that was and of course the big old thing is going from Unreal to Custom Engine.
Yes.
Was a mindset shift, for sure, where it went from less of an implementer role, which was definitely what I was doing more at GPS, was more so almost that audio gameplay field of like, hey, we want this system, go program it. And not so much the tools, pipeline, workflow, gameplay, kind of jack of all development cycle stages work that I did at ZOS.
Yeah, I think that's such a fascinating piece that people often don't comprehend, is the difference of building on top of something that is a sequel mm-hmm. or is an existing, you know, tech stack, and building that tech stack from the ground up when you don't even have the basics, right? That is those are such two incredibly different challenges of mind-numbingly different scope.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, for sure.
An adaptation to move to that.
It was definitely, yeah, it was certainly surreal kind of being fresh out of college. I joined ZOS like less than a year after I graduated, to being like, oh yeah, you are now responsible for a AAA, like multi, like billion dollar, like game engine audio tech stack. Like, thankfully we were integrating WISE. I would have had to like actually break myself to build a whole game audio engine from scratch too.
Yes.
But yeah, it was certainly a wild experience going from, yeah, you graduated, you're working on Unreal, to, yeah, build it all. See ya.
Yeah. Yeah.
Go do it.
But also, you know, to the type of engineer that you are, it mm-hmm. sounds like an incredible opportunity to like literally enable, like you couldn't get more enabling than actually building the foundations themselves.
100%. Like, yeah. And I think if there's anything I'll say for these last 4 years, it's one of those things where, like, I think if it leveled, it was like an XP multiplier.
Yeah.
Like working in the environment that we did, on the things that we did, it truly went from going like, I think, yeah, I worked at ZOS for about 4 years. I gained 8 years of experience in that time.
Yes. Yeah. I can't even imagine walking into that role. You know, I walked into that role with a lot of experience and was like, how are we going to do this? You must have been like, what are they thinking? How is this even possible? Like, yeah, that's amazing. That must have been incredible.
I think one of the crazy things for me is that there was some audio code that was written by a previous engineer that was no longer with the company. And my first task was like, yeah, evaluate it, see how it is, and go from there. And I was like, we need to get rid of all of this. It's not worth it.
Yeah.
And that was a crazy, like, again, coming out of college, going like, hey, burn everything you have for audio? ? Was a wild thing to say. Yeah. Thankfully, when we did bring on, we were bringing on another audio engineer a few months after myself, who has more experience programming than I do alive, which helped lighten that load a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
And also verified, like, yep, I agree with his decision. We should burn this all. Was a nice, helped alleviate some of the imposter syndrome that I think off the gate might have been there a little bit.
Yeah, I can imagine. And like you said, that's an accelerant in terms of experience, right? When you have someone mm-hmm. that knows this stuff, walks in and goes, no, he knows what he's talking about. You're right. Yeah, that is, those kind of things are so valuable. So let's talk a little bit about audio engineering itself. Like we've got an idea of what you're drawn to, about it. But I think it's a very misunderstood, like I said, it's not just play audio clip well, right? There's so much more to it, especially in modern engines. Like, how, give me an example of, you know, a piece of technology that you would build that would make audio, you know, make the audio sound better, is a dumb way of saying it, but, you know, would enable the way that audio needs to be on a project like, you know, a AAA project.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to it, because I think the one thing that is, one of the things I also really like about all, like from a technical perspective to some extent, one of the things I really like about audio engineering is we are a discipline that by its nature requires us to be somewhat multifaceted in the types of engineering work we do. Audio cannot exist alone. Mm-hmm. I cannot make audio without gameplay. I cannot make audio without animations, without VFX, without everything else that like a game, for audio to exist in a game, there also needs to be a game behind it that is empowering. Mm-hmm. So in turn, I have to kind of jump around a lot of different stacks. You know, I might be doing animation tech one day. I might be working with the dialogue system the next day. I might be going over the VFX tools the other day. So I think some examples there where it's less necessarily about like a lot of the stuff that you might find yourself doing as an audio engineer is not just how do I make this sound good, but how do I even make this sound, period. One example is like, especially in custom engine environments, is like, hey, we need to be able to tie audio to animations. How do we do that? What does that work look like? How do we trigger those? Where are those triggers coming from? And that was some work that I did on our project as well, is hooking up that those two systems where you place clips on a timeline, make sure they play at the right frame of the animation, and have audio work with there, and make sure that stack is also usable. Like, how do we actually assign those, not just play the audio from the animation, but assign audio to that clip on that animation? What does that look like? Answering those questions and those design problems from a workflow perspective is a lot of the work an audio engineer might find themselves doing.
That makes sense. Yeah. And like you say, you're very much setting up and enabling things to function in the way they need to function. Okay, so how does being a video game developer, being an audio engineer, relate to you as a gamer? Are they very separate?
I think they've related more and more the more I'm an audio, like the longer I've been an audio engineer. Mm. I think because, like I said, out the gate, I wasn't a musician. You know, I did not jump into audio engineering or audio programming because I was like, man, I love how games sound. Like, of course, I never didn't like how games sound, but that was the discipline itself was not what drew me into the discipline. It was just a byproduct of seeing something that seemed cool. So in turn, like, out the gate, I wasn't this like deeply invested. Like, I know every game soundtrack like the back of my hand. I know I'm deeply involved in all the artistic discussion around whether or not this game is saying something in its sound design or what have you not. I just play games. But as I became more of a game developer, as I've grown into the field and the role and the responsibilities of that role, by its nature, I think my focus has had to kind of fall in love with that along the way through the own experience of it. So now it's suddenly I'm no longer just, I can't not play a game and think about how it's doing its audio work. I can't not play a game anymore and think about how is the music system working? What response, like, is it responding to the player's camera in a certain way? Is this happening? Is that happening? The brain just goes and start immediately picking apart all the audio pieces. So in turn, as a gamer now, audio is such a significant part of my gaming experience because it just has to be. Like, as someone working on this tech, I have fallen in love with the tech and the creative and the like experience such that like when I play a game, it is the first thing that catches my attention.
Interesting. And does that, it's very similar to game feel for me. Does that have a negative impact on some of the game? You know, do you find that it puts you off games that you would want to play because it's not good, you know, maybe not hitting the things you need it to hit? Or
I don't think so, because I think if there's one thing that I've found is that like, it's for me, if anything, that's just like, if there's ever a point where a game I'm playing feels like it's not like the audio isn't matching something I want it to expect or whatever, I'm just like, I'll know to do this better. But the core value I get from game development and gaming are different in a way where I can enjoy a subpar audio experience if I like or an audio experience, subpar is not the right words, but an audio experience that maybe not aligning what I'm looking for, because like that's, as much as that like game developer part of me bleeds into my gaming experience, like games are games, and that's all, the full package is ultimately what I'm consuming in the end.
Got it.
Does that make sense?
No, that's good. So if it's good, it gives you tips, and if it's bad, it gives you tips.
Yeah, for sure. I think it is always. I think the hard part is just turning off that part of your brain to enjoy games truly as a gamer. You know. I know I'm playing something special when I realized I've been playing the game completely unadulterated and not analyzing it, even in the background. That's when I know I found something really, really good. But beyond that, I don't think there's ever been an overlap of my own experiences with audio in hindering my ability to enjoy a particular game.
Got it. That makes sense. Okay, as we're sort of getting to the end of winding this down, a couple of other things I'm kind of curious about, like, how does your family relate to your profession? Do they, you know, how does people around you relate to it?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're my family has always been very supportive. I'm incredibly supportive. I think there definitely was a point where, you know, like I said earlier, the question of like, should you really go to across the country for a game development degree? Why not just get a computer science degree? The irony is I graduated with a pure computer science degree, but that's a story for another time. like, so there were questions around that just in terms of like stability, financial viability, you know, but in terms of actual, like, yes, you want to make games. I'm not going to stop you. There was no judgment. There was no concerns there, but there was also no one in my family is really a gamer. Like, I think my brother has played some video games, especially when we were younger. There was we'd play Call of Duty every once in a while, you know, like my cousins and I might play Halo every once in a while, but there's really nobody else in my family, except otherwise it's a gamer, a capital G. That is who they are. That is their identity. They play as much as I do. So it was just an interest I had and that was really it.
Got it. Okay. Interesting. So yeah, very much like you say, an industry and a passion that you fell in love with yourself. You weren't sort of inspired mm-hmm. by an older brother or, you know, but has still found a way of kind of bonding you to people and becoming mm-hmm. such a pillar in a keystone in your life and who you are.
Yeah, no, exactly. I'm still trying to convince my father to learn how to play games, slowly but surely. I'm planning on going down in a few weekends now that I have the time and just being like, we're going to sit down for 48 hours and I'm going to at least get you to learn how to use a controller by the end of this.
Love that. I love that. Bring them into the fold. Bring him into the yes. fold. And just one final question. Like, you mentioned how you kind of relate so well to audio folks, you know, the kind of audio folks that you work with. Do you find that transcends outside games? You know, do you connect with kind of audio related, you know, musicians or, you know, soundtrack composers, or have you found sort of a common language there?
I think so. I think the opportunities for those conversations haven't really occurred as much as they could have otherwise, but it definitely is there is still a common interest there. You know what I mean? Like, what it means to provide an audio experience, whether it's games or otherwise, is there's always going to be some sort of foundational layer there. And I think that, generally speaking, I think outside of games, the types of people that do audio experience, there's a broader set of what that looks like, what that could mean, you know, so on and so forth. But it's still ultimately the same language we're speaking at the end of the day.
Got it. Okay. That's a wonderful story, Anthony. I kind of love understanding how you fell into it in the first place, right? This kind of passion for making stuff and, you know, and how that sort of shifted to another level, you know, in your professional career, and how you sort of, you know, you found your way into actually making video games. A really interesting journey. And I think that's one of the things that I take away from a lot of these conversations is ultimately we're all here, like you said, to make great games and like to make things that people consume and love. But the way we get there and what inspires us varies so wildly. Mm-hmm. Even if the passion, the sort of burning fire is very similar, like a passion for games. But yeah, I really appreciate you taking us on that journey. And I've really enjoyed, you know, getting to know you a bit more and how you got to where you got. And thank you for taking the time.
Yeah, no, of course. It was a pleasure. It was great to have a chat with you again.
Yeah, ditto. Thank you, sir.